Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Now, when looking at a map of the 2016 U.S. presidential election, the geographic political pattern is clear. Middle America and the South largely went to President Donald Trump, while the coasts largely went to Hillary Clinton. For many, this reason was, you know, very clear. After the election, actually, when I was covering politics at NPR, I visited Ohio and I met David Beatrice. He's the chairman of the Democratic Party in Mahoning County. It's an area that usually votes Democratic.
I told the campaign they were in trouble with blue-collar workers and that if they didn't retool their message, that they were not only going to lose Ohio, but that they were going to lose Pennsylvania and Michigan.
Beatrice told me that in spite of Trump's ostentatious wealth, he connected more effectively with working-class folks who needed jobs. But in a recent article for the Boston Globe, Evan Horowitz, a Quick Study columnist, takes issue with this common view that Trump won because of economic hardship in middle America. Evan, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Amazing to be here with you, Asma.
So, Evan, let's start with this map you compiled of the change in per capita income by county across the United States. It seems like it showed things, the change, I should say, from 1980 to 2015. Can you give us a quick recap for folks who haven't seen the piece, what you found?
Sure. And I should say, first off, I also was surprised. Like, the goal was not, I mean, you said I took issue with this. I actually set out to show that it was true and found that it wasn't true. It's obviously most effective to describe maps on the radio.
All right, I know.
So let's
right.
just do it that
Visually
way.
Describe
yeah.
it, folks.
So, I mean, imagine a map of the United States with the darkest red areas being the ones with the most income growth. Mm-hmm. What you see are the darkest red areas in the middle of the country, in a line running from North Dakota to Texas, mm-hmm. and then across the South. Those are the counties nationwide that have seen the fastest income growth over the last generation. Not counties along the coast, which is what I expected to see, and I think what the cliched narrative would suggest.
So you were looking at percent change, is that right?
So yeah, this is the, I mean, just throw aside the technical stuff. What I'm looking at is how much more money do people have in a given county than they had a generation ago?
I guess the reason I'm asking that, though, Evan, is because, right, like if you look at a county, say, like, you know, Mississippi, right? And I actually sort of went back and looked at some of these counties yeah. over time. And so the median household income in a place like Mississippi, in the 1980s, it was like 34,000 some. Now it's relatively, you know, 39,000 some. So they were starting, I mean, it sounds crude, but they're starting at like an F, right? And you get up to a D level. Whereas if you're looking at a place like Massachusetts or California, you're starting at as an A. So it feels to me like if you're starting at a really low level and you're improving a bit,
all right,
aren't
well, let's go back because I love a question like this. This is great. It's true. I'm not looking at where people are now. Okay, uh-huh. This is true. I'm not looking at who's rich and who's poor. I'm looking at how much change there's been. And one of the reasons for that is I think the narrative around, a lot of the narrative around the Trump wave has been that it's about economic stagnation. It's about communities that don't see a future. It's about communities that have been left behind. For those kinds of questions, change is what you want to know about. Are these communities improving or are they stuck? So that's why mm-hmm. I'm looking at change. The other thing is I checked this because I had mm-hmm. a couple people ask me about this. There is no connection between whether you started poor and whether you saw a lot of growth. Absolutely none. Poor counties did not see more growth than rich counties. The counties that saw the most growth were those in the middle of the country, not those that started off poor. There, you can find counties where that's true, but that's not the pattern.
And so, okay, I have two quick questions
please,
on
please.
This front. So one is, I mean, I get what you're saying, right, in terms of looking at percent change. But if you do look at, let's say, like, collectively a state, right, we look at Mississippi and we look at Massachusetts and we look at per capita income growth, they're relatively similar, right? Let's say like a 15% change in one and 18% change roughly in the other. But they're starting off at such diametrically opposed places. And maybe this is states versus counties, right?
No, but it's not. It would also be true at counties. Counties in Mississippi are clearly starting a different place. But again, the question is about, are those counties being left behind? Mm-hmm. Have they been left behind?
But if everybody's
was America
growing.
Great a generation ago uh-huh. in a way that it isn't? And I think I expected to find what you're suggesting, that actually the places that were great and aren't any longer are the you know yeah. places that went for Trump. But no. And when you look at what has changed, the places that have seen the biggest improvements since America was supposed to, just in the last generation, are places that went well, that are in the middle of the country, they're not coastal places.
Okay, so describe to me, what you're talking about by middle real quick.
So yeah, so this is the thing. And I think one of the confusions here is that it's very tempting to assume that the Midwest is the middle.
And I accept that as a native Midwesterner.
Well, as someone who's lived in Texas, where it is the middle but not the Midwest, it's easy to forget this. But so the cliche version is actually true mostly of the Midwest. The Midwest has not seen economic growth since the
generation. And that's what we had, I guess, David Beatrice in that intro.
Yeah, exactly. So that doesn't surprise me at all. In Ohio, you do have people who have gone a generation without seeing real economic growth, who've been hit hard by China. And that's true of the Midwest. It's just that you can't simply go, oh, it's true of the Midwest, therefore it's true of everything between the coasts in America. That is, it's true of everywhere in inland America. It's not true of everywhere in inland America. North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, down to Texas have seen enormous growth, some of it from fracking, but some of it before fracking. And the South, so all along the Gulf from Texas to Florida, has seen an incredible economic diversification, chiefly in the 80s and 90s, but extending here, with higher growth rates than in California or higher growth rates than you've seen much, you know, in New York or New Jersey. So I think I also was surprised. It's funny to be defending this position because it's not at all what I expected, and I don't have any sort of ideological reason to defend this position. It's just what the numbers show, that if you look at which counties have really done well economically, where people have more money than they did a generation ago, they're in the middle, the dead middle of the country, not the Midwest, and they're not meaningfully correlated with votes for Donald Trump.
So what explanations of the growth did you find? You mentioned fracking a bit.
Yeah, so fracking has been a major factor the last 10 years or so, which has caused a big oil boom in North Dakota and South Dakota, parts of Texas and Pennsylvania. But even if you leave out the fracking years, the map looks really similar if you look at income growth from 1980 to, say, 2004, 2005, before the fracking boom really took off. And the big impact seems to be some shift of manufacturing west out of the Midwest into North Dakota, Texas. And then, even more important, diversification and the growth of the service sector. Across the South, there's been a massive increase in the number of higher-skill service sector jobs over the last generation. Think business-to-business jobs, consulting jobs, insurance jobs, advertising jobs, things like that. And that's made the biggest difference. And that's true of New England, too. I mean, I'm talking about the middle because I think that's the surprising thing about this. But actually, the one coastal area that has done really well is right here. It's Massachusetts, Vermont, it's New Hampshire. We actually have seen a tremendous amount of growth, much more than you find in other coastal areas. So, I mean, you can feel good about that in Massachusetts. I don't think it breaks the surprising pattern, though.
So what are some of the political conclusions that you drew? It seems like you're very skeptical of this idea that economic hardship equals votes for Trump, right? Like that narrative you take issue with.
I think, I mean, I would phrase it differently. I would say I have become very skeptical because I went looking for evidence and couldn't find it. So I'm growing skeptical of it. And I think, you know, you would have to see it there. If economic stagnation were a primary engine of support for Donald Trump, there should be a basic correlation. You should be able to say, oh, look at this county. Has there been growth there? And if the answer is yes, they should have fewer votes for Trump. And maybe there'll be exceptions. But if you look at 1,000 counties, that's what you should see. And you don't see it. Okay. There's absolutely no statistical correlation between growth over the last generation and votes for Trump.
So can I ask you, okay, so
but there is,
I get what you're saying there.
There is a correlation between, well, other things that people realize.
Race,
but yes, like,
you were saying,
race is a big factor. If you have
and
a
that's
large
no surprise, right? I mean, like, we saw many poor black and brown voters not vote for Donald Trump. So
yeah. I mean, what is surprising is the sort of specificity of it, I think. That is, there seems to be a kind of tipping point if your county is 85% white or more. That is, if you're majority white, that's not necessarily telling, but you reach a tipping point where you get to a high level and then Trump support really shoots up. Same with the connection with education, too. White number of high school grads. That's a correlation you see everywhere. And you saw it in Massachusetts. Massachusetts is a very strong, even here, town-by-town connection between the number of white high school grads and support for Donald Trump.
So, Evan, I understand what you're saying about the Dakotas and down south to Texas, all right?
I feel like a used car salesman. I'm like, what do I have to do to get you into this argument today? No.
But no. I guess I understand what you're saying about the economic correlation, but I guess I'm having a difficult time taking that economic correlation and translating it into the political map that we saw of 2016. In part, right, because if you look at both North and South Dakota, the last time they voted for a Democratic candidate was Lyndon B. Johnson. Texas, you'd have to go back to the 1970s. So these are Republican states through and through. And in your own writing, you acknowledge that it is the Midwest that has struggled economically. And I would make the case as a political reporter that it's Ohio, Pennsylvania even, Wisconsin and Michigan that lost Hillary Clinton this election. And take those four states out, and frankly, nothing else really matters in the Electoral College, right?
Yeah. So I think at the state level, it's very hard to see what's going on, which is one reason it helps to look at the county level. Hmm. Because at the county level, you really do see that these things matter. It's true, those states that you say shifted the Electoral College.
And some of them traditionally went Democrat.
Yeah, so there are purple states, right? But at the county level, you really do see this pattern where even the counties that flipped. So, take your account. You want to look at the counties that flipped. Maybe that's the most interesting thing.
Sure.
Even among the counties that flipped, it's not counties, obviously can't be counties that were always red, right? Because they flipped by definition.
Sure.
And you would think maybe economics is a big connector there, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not there. Even again, even if you just really focus on that. So I should qualify that. There is an economic factor for counties that flip. If you don't adjust for geography, like because a lot of the counties that flipped are in the Midwest.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And because the Midwest is an area that really didn't see any economic growth, then you do end up with this where like lots of towns that didn't see economic growth did go more for Trump. But it's actually, seems to me, not an economic function. If it were an economic function, it would be happening in other places because there are counties, say, farther west that didn't flip that also had no growth. There are counties. There are an equal number of counties outside of the Midwest. The big function there, big factor there is, are you in the Midwest and struggling? Not have you struggled
so
over the
last 3 years?
So maybe
perhaps it's like a confluence of different factors, right? Because in the Midwest, there could be an economic justification, it sounds like you're saying. But maybe if you're in North Dakota or Texas, it sounds like...
But I don't think it works to parse it out. I mean, love this argument.
Totally.
This is so much fun. But I don't know that it works to parse it out this way. Because if it is a function of economics, you shouldn't just see it in the Midwest. I mean, if economics is what matters, you should see it everywhere.
I hear you, yeah.
And I guess my point is, I looked
and
everywhere.
You should have seen it across racial lines,
right? Yeah, that's why I wanted to look everywhere, because I wanted to see, well, we should see it everywhere. If this is what's going on, we should see it everywhere. And we don't really see it everywhere. There are plenty of places that not just voted for Trump, but shifted towards Trump and did so despite the fact that they've seen really, really strong economic growth for 30 years.
Gosh. Well, loads to think about. Thank you so much, Evan. I have gone over the time limit, so I'm going to have to close it there. That's Evan Horowitz at the Boston Globe's Quick Study columnist. Thanks again for joining us.
This is great. Thank you, Asma.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Asma Khalid. This is Radio Boston.